Hello.
Hola.
Welcome back to Double Indemnity, the podcast. We like to discuss new movie releases and we like to review them, even though we're highly not qualified to do such things.
Not at all.
Mm-hmm. So everybody prepare yourself for spoilers. We're going to talk about the entire movie. Also, remember to follow us on Letterboxd to leave comments on the next movie that we're going to watch at @DI_podcast.
Podcast.
I didn't check the Letterboxd. Did you check it?
I am checking it and nobody did.
Cool. Okay. First segment of the podcast before we start talking about the movie. What are we watching right now? Still watching Hijack.
Oh, yeah. We get a new Hijack this week. I forgot about
that. The season finale is tomorrow, I think.
No, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you have something on your face. I got it.
Thanks.
Also, we went to the movies and we saw The Haunted Mansion. 10 out of 10.
I would give it a 6.
Honestly, out of 10. I was expecting it to be way worse. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny. It was cute. It was witty. It wasn't that serious. They didn't take themselves that serious. There weren't any extreme political statements. Overall, I really enjoyed it.
I thought it was fine.
Okay.
That is pretty much what Disney's pumping out these days.
But I had an enjoyable time watching it, you know? Like, I wasn't bored.
True. I wasn't bored either.
You know? Where I get bored with, like, the live-action movies now that Disney puts out when it's, like, the exact same story of the princess. Like, yeah, if I wanted the story, I would go watch the other princess movie.
The original.
The original. That was a pretty quick first segment to the podcast. Okay. So, do you want to enter the movie?
It's Oppenheimer. Story of Robert Oppenheimer.
You're going to say story of my life.
And his role in the development of the atomic bomb. Directed by the one and only Christopher Nolan. In Nolan we trust.
Do people actually say that?
Yeah, it's like a thing on like shirts.
That's crazy.
He
honestly looks so pretentious. Not as much as Tarantino, but when you see a picture of him, you're like, he's the most basic man I've ever seen.
He's so basic and he speaks so like, he's so British and he speaks so like matter of fact and just so softly.
He doesn't seem like who I would picture. I'd imagine him to be more like eccentric. But then honestly, he's so like put together and sharp and to the point. It almost fits his movies.
I know.
You know, right? His movies are very blunt.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Continue.
He's directed a lot of movies. If you haven't heard of him, you might live under a rock. Inception, Tenet, The Dark Knight Trilogy, Memento, Interstellar, Dunkirk, and others. Nice.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised you didn't say The Prestige.
Oh, I thought I did.
Did you?
I might have.
Maybe did not. I miss it? I don't know.
This is his first rated R movie since Insomnia.
I don't know. Crazy. Insomnia. How long ago was that?
2002.
So like 20 years.
Yeah.
Why was it R rated? I guess because there was kind of nudity.
Nudity and language.
Why did he decide in this movie that he needed nudity and language, but not in his other movies?
I don't know. I guess I think it was integral to the Oppenheimer story.
Naked people.
Well, you know, his affair.
People have affairs without having R-rated movies.
That's true.
Thank you. I'm not advocating either way.
The movie stars an insane cast. To name a few, Cillian Murphy as Oppenheimer, Emily Blunt as his wife, Kitty, Robert Downey Jr. as Louis Strauss, right? It wasn't Strauss.
I don't remember how to say it.
I think it was Strauss. Matt Damon as the General Groves. Florence Pugh as Jean Tatlock. Josh Hartnett as Ernest Lawrence. Rami Malek as David Hill. Jason Clarke as Roger Robb. I could go on for years. Any guesses on the budget?
$100 million.
That is exactly correct. Because you
but you
knew
told
that.
Me that months ago and I remembered it.
Good job.
Yeah.
How much do you think it's made so far?
$200 million.
About $420 million.
Whoa.
Worldwide. Yeah. It's doing well.
Why is it doing so well? I guess it's an interesting story by a good director or what?
His movies always do well critically and financially.
How? Does he just have the magic touch?
he's got it down. He knows how to make a movie and how to market it. And
honestly, though, I didn't really feel like Oppenheimer was marketed that much, but I also don't use social media, so I don't get social media marketing. All right, everybody, if you're watching the podcast right now, you might have seen that the footage has changed. That's because our camera died, so we're using our other camera. So bear with us on this slight adjustment.
Probably a big decrease in quality.
Slightly, potentially, highly noticeable decrease in quality, but that's fine. We're going to move on. We're going to continue talking about this movie. So, do you have any other things you wanted to intro, Jonathan?
Yeah, so we saw this twice. The yeah. first time was not the most ideal theater situation.
Here's the situation. We live somewhere where they do $5 movie nights on Tuesdays, which, yes, great deal. But a normal movie on the weekend is $7.50. So, like, why would I want to save, like, $5 for both of us to go to the movies in total, $5 saved, just so that we can sit in a theater with a million people and sweat to death when we could go a day later, pay an extra $5 and literally have the theater to ourselves.
I couldn't wait any longer, but it was not a great experience. It was so hot.
Awful. Oh my God, it was so hot. It was so full. And I hate going to the bathroom in movies. I feel like I'm disrupting everybody and they hate me and I just don't love the attention of it. And so I had to pee so bad, and that movie is really freaking long, so I was in a lot of pain. So I'm glad we saw it a second time so I could actually, you know, watch it rather than just die in my seat sweating to death.
Just stay there and just
it was awful. But also yeah. It's just a good movie, so like if you watch it a second time it'll be enjoyable.
For sure. For first sure. time around I gave it a 4.5. This time around it's 5 stars.
I'd give it a 5-star. 5-star review from Jonathan Pyle. Pew pew.
Holy
pew,
crap.
Pew. Oh my God,
fireworks.
There's so much confetti everywhere.
We should animate that in there.
I'm not that.
Get your sister
skilled.
To work on that. Yeah, what to say? This movie moves.
What? So many words.
So many words, so little time.
We have all the time in the world.
Such a fast pace the first time we saw it, I thought.
Like, yes. It is. Like, yes. But all of his
breakneck.
Movies do. Like, I will say, this movie, the only thing excessively confusing about it was remembering everybody's names.
There were a lot of people.
Other than that, pretty understandable for a Nolan movie. Mm-hmm. Like, you get the gist of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're somebody who doesn't like science, so how would you rate their ability to like explain and work off of scientific concepts the whole time? Like, did it make sense to you?
I thought it made sense to me. I kind of wish they went more in depth with how they like, maybe not more in depth,
how the bomb works or something,
of how they mined the plutonium and the uranium, you know.
I bet it wasn't that interesting if they didn't show it.
Yeah, it probably wasn't.
It's probably just like people slaving away in a mine exploding. No, I don't know. I have no idea what it's
like.
Yeah,
I have no idea. But also, I don't think the movie should be any longer, so.
Sequel? No.
This was based on a book, too.
Yeah, but it seemed like the book it was based off of was more of just like a recap of like what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Was this considered like to be very factually, like historically accurate?
Yeah, pretty much. Most of it was pretty accurate.
From what you remember?
Yeah, back in that time.
Back when you were working with the boys in
the
Los
boys
Alamos.
And the bombs.
The bomb boys.
Get some brewskis with the bombs and the boys.
Brewskis, bombs, and boys.
New band name, I call it. Yeah, this movie's incredible, honestly. And I knew it was going to be.
You've been talking about it for so long.
This
so
is what
long.
Happens. He comes
Longer
out with
than
a
Barbie.
Movie every 3 years. And the amount of
you've been talking
up,
about this probably since 2021.
Oh, yeah, when he first announced it.
Yeah.
Same with Tenet when that was announced in 2018.
Yeah, true. So he's released 2 movies within the time we've been together. You know what this is going to be like? This is going to be like how everybody always remembers who was president in their lifetime, but not who was president outside of their lifetime. So we will always remember what Nolan movies were released when we were together.
That's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny. What was I going to say?
You're just at a loss for words, it seems.
I know, pretty much. Probably one of my favorite scores ever.
Oh. It was good.
I've been listening to it on repeat.
Being somebody who, like, I am not a qualified musician, but I do play with a symphony, like an orchestral symphony, classical music. This music would be so terrible to play. I would, it would hate suck to it. Play. You would be having an arm cramp the whole time, both arms. You would be crying because it's so just like aggressively repetitive and so fast paced. And he perfectly captures like what he's going for with the movie. Like, it was wonderful. Like, I loved it. But all I could think of was like how terrible it would be to have to play it. And maybe if I was a professional musician, I was actually like, you know, good, then it would be easier and more enjoyable. But just from my point of view, as a, I would call myself a mid-tier level musician, it would be pretty
painful.
It seems
like it would be very difficult to play.
But I love to listen to it, even though it makes me feel very anxious.
I love it.
It's supposed to make you anxious. Does it make you anxious when you listen to it?
Kind of, but it's also so like intense and inspiring. I don't know.
So what are you inspired to do now?
Not inspired
what
to
has
do anything.
Inspired you?
It's just like
that you're filled with the inspiration of nothing.
Exactly. I've been listening to it on my drives to work since watched it.
Do you feel like
nothing to prep me up for
HR
more than Ludwig Göransson, man?
I just like, I feel like if you listen to Interstellar as you're driving to work, that's more appropriate. Driving through the cornfields of South Dakota, like that would be way more appropriate.
Well, it looks similar to Los Alamos, kind
Los
of.
Los Alamos.
Sorta.
No, it's way more like Interstellar. But I guess Los Alamos were kind of remote, but not really.
Not really. Anyway, Ludwig Göransson is a genius, and this is his best score yet, I think.
I think we're going to get some Oscar nominations coming up out of this movie.
We're going to get a
big
lot.
Money Oscar nominations.
Who do you think?
Oh, baby. Okay. I think that 100% Emily Blunt for supporting
100%,
actress.
100%, yes.
I think the score has a shot. I think the cinematography has a shot because didn't they blow up a real bomb?
Yeah.
So I think that has a shot. I feel like potentially the guy who played Oppenheimer,
Cillian Murphy,
for best actor. Yes. Also Robert Downey Jr. for supporting actor.
I think it's a lock.
I think there's a lot of things that they have a shot at. So I'm probably missing categories that I don't remember exist. You know, best documentary feature. No.
Best sound editing, probably.
I don't think the wardrobe like really blew me away.
I
would not say wardrobe.
I don't think Nolan's movies usually pick up on that.
He's dropped her bone on the computer. Okay, carry on.
I'm trying to think of other categories. Production design. They recreated the entire town of Los Alamos for this.
So I have a question. Was Los Alamos like, is it still there, or did they get rid
of
the whole town?
Yeah, it's still there.
Can you visit it?
Yeah, they filmed it near the original town. And then
so is it still radioactive where they blew up the bomb?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay, I'm just curious.
And they filmed inside the actual house where
they lived?
Oppenheimer, Robert and Kitty lived.
That's so cool. Wow. His dedication to like real stuff, you know, he's probably comparable, probably not as good as Mr. Beast with his realism.
Beast mode.
LOL.
Where was my article?
Do we want to get into the plot? We've had
just
quite
so much
some
to
conversation,
say.
Just introductory. Well, I have a couple of things I want to talk about that aren't getting into the plot prior to that kind of, I think, fit into this point of the conversation. I want to talk about the black and white versus the colored parts. So they like in the introduction of the movie, it's in color, and then all of a sudden they switch to a totally another storyline where it's in black and white. And so one, the fusion is in black and white, and then the other one, fission, is in color. So they're right. Kind of doing like a little play on scientific stuff for like labeling each one. And you said something about one was his perspective and one was an outside perspective.
So the black and white is from an objective point of view. And then the color scenes are from Oppenheimer's perspective, because the script for the color scenes were written in first person, which is really weird and really unique. Christopher Nolan said he thought it would be quite a challenge for Cillian Murphy to do that, and he wanted to do something different.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So I Googled what fusion and fission mean to see if maybe there was a reason they chose each one for which, but I honestly can't figure it out. So fission, which was the one in color, so in Oppenheimer's perspective, is atoms splitting, basically. It's a lot more complicated than that, but it's basically atoms splitting. And then fusion, the black and white, the objective perspective, is atoms coming together. So what do you think?
Wait, sorry, say the first. You said fusion is atoms coming together?
Mm-hmm. And fission is atoms separating.
Fission was the black and white?
Fission was color.
Fission was color?
Yeah, so I don't know if it's maybe like fission is the culmination of everything like breaking and like happening and everywhere and all this stuff is happening. And then maybe fusion, when they're in the black and white, is when the atoms, like everything culminates into this final moment or something.
Oh.
I don't know.
No, that's interesting.
I probably not explain this well.
I wouldn't have thought
about
that.
But I was wondering, because I know fusion and fission mean different things, so it's like he must have had an intention, but I honestly can't figure it out.
That's very interesting. I gotta research that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good
Science
a good point.
Rules.
Science.
Just science quoting things. Bill Nye there. Science things. So what do you think about the black and white versus the color juxtaposition storylines?
I think it works well with his theme. He always plays with like time, you know?
Yeah, he does.
So I think that definitely works in with the past scenes and then the present scenes with how he does time. As far as like the second watch, I couldn't, maybe just wasn't paying attention close enough to the objectivity versus the subjectivity of the scenes. Either way, it looks great, the IMAX. Black and white.
It's a crisp photo, right?
It didn't exist before this movie, IMAX, black and white. They made it specifically for this movie.
What? They shot it in black and white. They didn't color it.
Yeah, they shot it, but they made film specifically for that.
Well, that's so cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. I feel like they did a great job, like, making you, feel, like, kind of similar emotions to what they were trying to portray with Oppenheimer. Like, especially with the music. Every time it was in color, the music was very eccentric and overwhelming. And, and like, the sounds were very, like, overwhelming sensory, like, stimulation, basically. Like, I think everything happening in his brain the whole time.
Yeah, that's true.
And I really liked that. And I think then when they switched to the black and white, I kind of liked how, you know, black and white, like,
it was,
you know how they say, like, facts, black and white, like, very to the point, this is how it is, this is what happened, you know? And I guess that's kind of, like, what the flip was to black and white, and maybe the symbolism of it.
That's a great point, yeah.
I mean, so many movies have storylines where they have two things happening at the same time, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's kind of some cool symbolism as to why they chose the black and white versus the color.
I like that answer. Yeah, that's good.
And I also liked the color in the movie in general.
Me too.
So that was good. That was well done.
Yeah, very well done.
Mm-hmm. So something else I want to talk about the movie. This entire movie, basically, if you think about it, overarching, is just two interrogations that happened at two different points in time, but they are just overlapping.
They're going back and rewinding.
Yeah, they're jumping between.
Reverse. Diagonal.
Put it in reverse, Jerry. So then there's the one, first one, is Oppenheimer, who is appealing to not have his security clearance revoked. This is in color. And that's the one story. And then the other story of someone being interrogated is Strauss, because he's trying to be sworn in as the Secretary of Commerce, and this is in black and white. And they're two vastly different experiences, but both of the men basically the entire time have their whole lives being judged and ruled on without what feels like fair treatment.
Yeah, yeah.
Both of them are kind of like, whenever they try to speak up about maybe potentially unfair treatment, the people who are running the entire show basically say, well, this isn't a trial, so you don't get that.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good comparison, too. Mm-hmm. You're picking up on a lot of things.
I know. It's because I saw it two times.
Twice.
Spent six hours of my life watching.
But it flies by.
It does. Honestly, the first time, because my stomach hurt really bad and I had to pee, like the most I've ever had to pee in my entire life, I really wasn't paying attention. I was just like, how much longer? I was like watching the movie like, this could be a resolution. Like, is it going to happen? I was like, I just need to wait for the bomb to go off and then I'd be golden. But no there's a whole story after.
Also, fun fact.
Ooh.
So, you know, like right before they're waiting for the bomb to go off, for the time for the storm to pass.
Yep.
They say, oh, we'll find out in an hour and 58 minutes. And the bomb goes off an hour and 58 minutes into the movie. Love that shit.
He does that stuff all the time, doesn't he? What's crazy to me is the amount of planning that takes to have it written into the script and then also be able to edit it like perfectly.
Yeah, that's...
That's so much planning.
That's nuts.
Wow. He has a flair for drama. Just a little.
Just a little bit. What was I going to say? I totally forgot.
You ready to walk through the plot?
Yes.
Okay. So... Thank you, Wikipedia, for helping me remember everything that happened in the movie, because I'm useless and I wouldn't be able to do that on my own. I am going to walk through the story in more of a chronological way, just because there's so much jumping back and forth in this movie that it's very hard to tell it exactly the way it happened in the movie without confusing everybody and myself included. But also one other thing I wanted to talk about with the way that he shot it. And he had two storylines going at the same time. It reminded me kind of how Wes Anderson likes to do that. Wes Anderson likes to have his colored story and his black and white story.
Yeah,
but true. I honestly always think Wes Anderson's black and white story is boring. And because that's you don't so have true. The excitement of the color, it almost makes it even more boring. If the story is crap and I'm watching it in black and white, you know what I mean? Like the sensory stimulation isn't as much, so... I think that Nolan did a very good job with the way he did the black and white, because no matter what, the black and white storyline is always more boring.
Yeah, yeah, that's like, very true.
No matter how good the storyline is, like
the French Dispatch in the black and white.
And then Asteroid City was the same way.
Yeah.
I just, honestly, any movie that tries to be in black and white today, it's very hard for it to not be inherently boring.
I'm trying to think of others.
The Zendaya movie. With the guy from The Black Klansman. That was in black and white.
Yeah, Malcolm and what was it? Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't a great movie.
There's plenty of movies. I feel bad. I can't think of any right now.
Well, but Schindler's List was just black and white.
Schindler's List, though, the black and white had a symbolism to it where it worked really well.
Yeah.
And also, I feel like we, as people of our generation... At least I do, because all the footage you have from time periods prior to, I don't know, like in the past, basically, even though you know in World War II they had colored film, you still imagine it from like black and white pictures as if life was in black and white. So it almost sets the scene for it, you know?
Yeah, agreed.
Being in black and white. So that's different. That works really well. But you have to be super intentional. You have to do a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
And Nolan did a great job.
He does.
I wanted to talk about black and white movies.
Yeah, Nolan. This isn't the only one that he did that in Memento too, black and white and color. But that movie is a lot more confusing. Yeah,
I'm not surprised. He tends to be a little confusing.
Like there's.
I was worried because with Tenet, it was so off the wall confusing. I was really worried this movie was going to be like that too, but he really. He just perfectly made it, I think.
And his dialogue is better in this one than in Tenet, as in terms of hearing it.
The only time it's hard to hear is at the beginning.
Yeah.
Then after that,
the
it's
music.
Fine.
Yeah. In Tenet, it was rough, and they were wearing masks, so that made it even harder.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but there's a video of Christopher Nolan explaining the plot of Memento, and it just makes absolutely no sense. It's hilarious.
I feel like the way his brain works is one of those, like, he is one of those special humans that thinks differently than everybody else, and that's why he's able to make such, like, amazing movies.
He's the GOAT.
Is he your favorite director?
Yeah, he's top one, top two. Yeah.
Who would be, like, a close second then?
Him and Denis Villeneuve. I've told you his name many
times. Is he the guy who does Drive?
No.
But I thought you liked his color from the Drive. I don't know. I probably do, but I don't feel like thinking about it right now. I'm thinking about Oppenheimer.
Dune, Arrival, Blade Runner. Sicario. Prisoners. Enemy.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So, the opening scene of Oppenheimer is of Oppenheimer himself watching raindrops hitting a puddle.
Which is how it ends, too.
Yeah, just how it ends, too. Potato, patata, potato, patata. So the whole film intro is basically them just showing you that Oppenheimer is young. He's a scientist. He's troubled, but he's obsessed with quantum mechanics. They show him as being, like, super bad at math and super terrible at, like, in the lab, but also, like, such a gifted theorist and physicist. And honestly, I want to talk about this. I feel like this is translates so well to the real world that all of the greatest geniuses in our world, like, tend to not be gifted and talented at the basic skills you assume are necessary to be a genius.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, think about it. Like, you know, musicians in the sense of, like, mainstream music, they can't read sheet music, but they are well renowned and make millions making music.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, gosh, I had other examples, but my notes got deleted on accident. But same thing here with physicists. Like, they also talked about how Einstein hated math.
Yeah.
But he was, like, a world-renowned physicist, you know? I think it's interesting.
I think that's a very good point. I think that's...
Oh, yeah, and businessmen. World-renowned businessmen, business owners who don't understand the basics of accounting, you know?
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that can be applied to a lot of things.
Yeah, I think it's cool. There you go, kids. Inspiration. Achieve your dreams, like, even if you can't do the basic skills of what you need to. Unless you want to be a doctor or a lawyer, where you actually need to learn things to do it. Learn the things.
Drop some wisdom on you.
Mm-hmm. But I thought that was interesting how they did that. Mm-hmm. So... at the beginning of the movie, he's super frustrated because he's going through school. He's trying to learn, but he's getting annoyed with the math and the lab. And he's got some tutors who are kind of mean to him because of it. And so he poisons one of his teacher's apples in a fit of frustration and anger.
This did not happen in real life.
Really?
That is, yeah. His grandson was upset about that in the movie. He
why
said,
did they
that's
do
kind
it?
Of an
it's a very
intense
big
accusation. I don't know why.
I think like the only reason I could think they did it because would maybe because it shows that he's an excessively impulsive person who doesn't think of the consequences of his actions when he does them.
Yeah.
Now later on he realizes, but in the moment his passion and emotions take over his reasonable thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was just a visual way of showing that.
Yeah, I agree. And so thankfully he realizes that he shouldn't have poisoned his teacher, and he rushes back to get the apple, and he barely stops someone from eating it, saying that there's a wormhole. Did you get it when you were watching the movie? I was like, that's good. I didn't realize it till I saw the second one.
Yeah, but too. The
first one I was just like, smart, you know, I mean, keep note of that. If you ever need to stop someone from eating a poisoned apple, just say there's a wormhole in it, because nobody would eat an apple with a wormhole. Because I couldn't think of another reason why somebody would be like, you're right, I shouldn't eat that apple.
True.
Mm-hmm. So keep that noted. Just don't poison people in order to use that tip. So Oppenheimer then moves on to complete his PhD in physics in Germany at a different school that supports his theoretical goals better than the school he was at. And then he returns to the United States because he wants to bring quantum physics research to the States. And he ends up teaching at Berkeley and Caltech, which are basically the two highly renowned schools.
Big boys.
In California for their just geniusness. So, yeah.
When he meets that scientist named Heisenberg, I really thought Bryan Cranston was just going to show up from Breaking Bad. Because that's his name when he becomes a meth dealer.
That's funny.
Heisenberg, yeah.
Because of this, it was a reference to the scientist?
I think so.
Oh, that's interesting. If I was a great scientist, I wouldn't want people to use my name as their drug lord name.
Come on, it's a cool legacy.
I don't plan on being a great scientist, though. I've never been good in the lab.
But you do
I like to see the sunshine.
Becoming a drug lord.
No, not that either. I don't think so.
Well, that's disappointing.
Mm-hmm. I take multivitamins. Does that count?
I take multivitamins.
Mm-hmm. When I'm dealing you your multivitamin in the morning, you can call me... what's that famous scientist's name? The only woman I can think of is like Madame Curie.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't want to be called Curie. I don't even know how to say her
Keurig.
Name.
Keurig.
Keurig, Madame Keurig. That's what you could call me as I'm making my coffee in the morning. Okay, so... Da-na-na. So at this time, he starts seeing a very volatile woman. Her name is Jean in the movie. Her name in the real world is Florence Pugh. Also thinks she could be nominated for a supporting actress performance.
Yeah, I mean, she delivers every time. I've never seen...
I honestly think every single one of her movies, she is better than she was before.
Yeah,
like, agreed. She improves every time. She always amazes me with how much better she can get. Because some actors like Brad Pitt... It's Brad Pitt. That's what you're going to get. He's great, but he always has the same level of acting, whereas she is just constantly, like, every time, mm-hmm. topping herself.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I love her.
That's great.
So, she and him do not have the best of relationships. You can tell she does not very good at building relationships, trusting people.
She hates flowers.
She treats him like trash. He seems to like it, to each their own. And she's also a member of the Communist Party. But I will say, one thing that they did develop in the movie about his character is that he was very patient with the aggressive women in his life. Like, they could say the worst rude things to him, and his response would either be, what's the solution, or he wouldn't be offended by it, and he would just shrug it off.
Very matter of fact.
Yeah, like, I think he was so logical that he wouldn't even, like, fight with these extremely volatile... emotional, I don't want to say volatile, but women who, you know, acted on their emotions a lot. Mm-hmm. So I liked that. They did a good job, really good job developing his character. So then he meets his future wife, Catherine Punig. She's a biologist and an ex-communist, and he impregnates her.
That's a combination.
I know. So I just want to talk about Emily Blunt in this movie. She played such a good drunk wife. Like, she was just, I don't even know how actors can play drunk, because she just did it in such an amazing way. Like, and she was so passionate. She seemed so real. The only thing that threw me off was her, like, soft Southern accent. Like, she didn't even do the accent. It was like the money South accent.
Yeah, money South.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was the best acting I've ever seen from her.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. It was so good.
Yeah. And
she was so dedicated to it.
The scene at the end where she, we'll talk about this later, but when she testifies like that, oh, chills down my
spine. Her testifying was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I was just imagining them finally, like, the day of Emily Blunt's testimony day to shoot, and she just, like, jaw drops, like, everybody is amazed at her acting skills.
I couldn't help but smile at that scene each time.
I know. You just, like, she's such a badass. I loved it. And I love how dedicated him and her were to each other, because mm-hmm. they're both just complete messes of a human, but they somehow are so supportive of each other, and they're always there for each other no matter literally anything that happened.
Yeah.
Okay, so World War II breaks out. And General Groves shows up at Berkeley because he wants to recruit Oppenheimer to lead the Manhattan Project to produce the first atomic bomb.
Atom bomb.
So Oppenheimer has to reassure everybody that he's not a communist, and Groves, because of the time crunch, knows that Oppenheimer is an asset, and he kind of overlooks his communist ties in order to get him to be the director of the Manhattan Project. Okay, so Oppenheimer basically steps up to the role instantly. He knows exactly where to lead the project. He knows who to put on the project. He knows how to coordinate it. So they set up a whole fake town in Los Alamos, New Mexico, which is one of his favorite places. And they are creating a bomb. Did you have anything you wanted to say?
I do, yes. What was I going to say?
I don't know.
IMAX film for this movie is 11 miles long and weighs 600 pounds.
So when they shoot on real film, do they have like a machine that they run it through and then it digitizes it? They don't actually like edit it like splicing, right?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. As far as I know.
So what about IMAX is such good quality? Why is it that somehow shooting on IMAX film is better quality than like digital film?
Because it's like, well, some people like Nolan, Tarantino, and Paul Thomas Anderson are the only people that use the 70 millimeter film. And because it's got the pictures bigger, it's better quality. And then filming on an IMAX camera will always provide better results.
So is it really expensive? Is that why other people don't do it?
It's very expensive. Yeah. And yeah, Nolan has been doing it since The Dark Knight.
He's known for it. Mm-hmm. And we were so upset, y'all, when we found out that there are no IMAX theaters within how far? A 3-hour drive of here.
That was rough.
So I was so heartbroken because I was like, we will go find you an IMAX theater, Jonathan, to watch Oppenheimer. But we were unable to. So instead, we just watched it 2 times in 3 days and we're talking about it on a podcast.
This podcast camera is not IMAX.
Yeah, for sure. We actually downgraded to the lower quality camera just for this one.
360 HP.
Exactly.
Whatever that means.
Really bad quality.
Really bad.
Okay, so they're working on this atomic bomb problem, and they realize that there is a minute chance that they could trigger a chain reaction that could destroy the entire world. But it's close to zero, so they're not worried. They're fine with it.
Theory will only take you so far.
I know. And so he asks Einstein for his opinion on it, and they have this little heart-to-heart, and you learn that they're buddies. But it's so crazy to me that they literally were dropping this bomb like, oh, the world could potentially end because of this.
It's possible, yeah.
At least the war would be over.
That's true. And everybody would be over.
Yeah, everybody would be over. Okay, so the war in Europe has now, okay, they go through a lot of mishy-mashy things. I'm not going to touch on everything that happens, but I know I just said the war started, but mish-mash. The war is about to end now in my description of the story.
A couple years go by.
Yeah, a couple of years go by. They're working hard. So they started to win the war, the Allies, and Hitler has died. So a lot of the members of the Manhattan Project think that the atomic bomb isn't actually needed to win the war. But Oppenheimer's stance this whole time is that the bomb is so powerful that it will be the bomb to end all wars and all bombs. But of course he's wrong, and you find out later that everybody got so excited by this one, they want bigger and better bombs.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, so that becomes a whole thing. But it's very sweet that he thought that it would be so powerful that people would be so scared of it, they would never make another bomb again, and it would end all war. But instead, we just continue to have war. Everybody has atomic weapons, but we just don't use them.
Yes.
Because I Googled it, and there has not been a use of an atomic bomb since World War II.
Yep. Yeah.
So there have only been 2 atomic bomb explosions in the entire history of mankind, and it was...
3.
Oh, 3. Yeah. No, actually, they've also...
they did test,
used
too.
Within war. Because, yeah, I mean, all the countries who have atomic bombs probably tested them. Yeah, so tested them. One's used in war to attack other countries.
True. Yeah, they did test in, like, the South Pacific, which, like, screwed up a lot of people's lives.
What do you mean?
Like, they did tests in the near the South Pacific Islands. Yeah. Which is what created Godzilla. Like
the Bikini Island.
Bikini Island?
Bikini Island is where they tested a bunch of atomic bombs.
I'm just thinking of SpongeBob.
Bikini Atoll,
right. Yeah. Yeah, the Marshall Islands. Yeah. Also known as.
And that's where the word bikini for like the bathing suit comes from.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's a very sad story, though. Yes, Beans, I know. It's really sad.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so...
What was I going to say?
I had something I wanted to say, too.
So, yes, they did recreate the entire town of Los Alamos for this movie. That's pretty cool. there are no full CGI shots in the movie. There's not partial? One shot that's all CGI. There was some editing and overlapping of
explosions. Okay, well, they did do a lot of shots that were like, oh, here's some particles in the air, you know?
I know, like some rubber bands going, whoa, whoa.
Rubber bands.
Top Gun did a similar approach, but they used a limited amount of CGI in that movie. Top Gun Maverick.
Close to none. What was it that we had a podcast where it was like, you were like, close to none. And I was like, is it none?
I don't remember that. Close to none. And yes, scientists did worry that an atomic explosion could set fire to the atmosphere and destroy all life on Earth.
Oh, I've also forgot that they were comparing him to Prometheus.
Yep.
That was a big thing.
Hence the book. Mm-hmm. And then Edward Teller is known as the father of the H-bomb, the hydrogen bomb.
Oh, so Teller did continue on to make the H-bomb.
Yeah, the guy who was, like, really sweaty all the time.
I know, he seemed like he was, like, always so hot.
I know,
like,
yeah.
He was sweating so much, but I really liked his character.
He's such a good actor.
He was a great actor.
Benny Safdie, love him. He's a director, wonderful. Too.
Okay, so, they test the bomb... the test is called the Trinity test and it works out well. It goes well. They took in the sheets.
Also love how accurate the explosion is. You see the light and you don't hear the explosion for like,
I loved it seconds. Because all you hear is breathing and like the people existing because that's all that they would hear. Cause everybody's just watching the bomb go off.
Yeah. Also, shout out to Josh Peck for pushing the detonating the...
I know. It was so weird that he was in that movie.
The guy from Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
There Josh Peck is from Drake and Josh, Jonathan.
Yeah, I know. But there was the guy from Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Oh my God.
Roderick.
I didn't even realize it until you just said it now.
You didn't know that.
Wow. That was a game changer. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So, why don't you tell us all about the atomic bomb that they used in the movie? Because
yeah.
I'm hoping you have some really good fun facts.
So, this article says, also, I should get my sources, History versus Hollywood.
You I've used so
this
bad at getting site your sources.
Before, used it for
all the goodies.
Steven Spielberg's movie. What was that movie called?
Oh, the one that was not enjoyable.
The one that was just like, meh.
Ooh, the Fairylands.
The Fablemans.
I knew if I said Fairylands, it would get us there.
Yeah.
Well, you found it before.
I got
but
there.
It would have been helpful
I was
if we needed
without
it.
Without your help.
Whatever. I'm going to the Fairylands.
So, some fans were misled when Christopher Nolan said that he did not use CGI for the Trinity test bomb, and everybody was like, he actually blew up an atomic bomb for a movie.
I thought that he did. Which, you told me that he blew up an atomic bomb.
I thought
bomb.
He did too, which isn't that weird for Christopher Nolan, you know?
But when you first told me that, I was like, there is absolutely no way a government in the world would allow a director to detonate an atomic bomb.
Still though.
There is literally no way.
That would be so cool.
So when you told me that, I was like, damn, this guy had some strings he could pull. Like
all the strings.
So I was right. He didn't actually.
He did not. He said, it's flattering that people would think that I would be capable of something as extreme as that on one hand, but it's also a little bit scary.
It's honestly though, I thought it when I was watching the movie and it made it so interesting.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a real time bomb. Damn it. I thought it was real.
It's not real.
Well, also like it's good. People shouldn't be able to buy them, but
yeah.
Wow.
They recreated it using miniatures, due to the
Why
fact.
Why do you say miniatures? It's miniatures. Our whole relationship.
Miniatures.
You
see, well,
like,
look,
like Minnie Mouse. Miniatures.
There's a second eye, and it's got an IA. Miniatures.
Let me see it. I think it's miniatures.
You're probably right, but I say miniatures. Should I say it one more time just for beans?
She had no input.
So anyway, they did it mini.
I just always thought it was pronounced miniature.
It might be.
It's just you pronounce things so weird sometimes.
What can I say?
Miniatures.
The explosion was recreated on a specially built set using magnesium, gasoline, propane, and aluminum powder to recreate the blast.
So was it really just like a mini bomb?
Yeah, so it was just a miniature. I'm just like envisioning like a little like...
No, like a tiny like...
It was probably bigger than that. But. Also, this is the only well-exposed color photograph of the Trinity test.
Are the other ones not that good? So yeah, that's what it would really look like.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
Maybe you could do your magic, show it on the screen. There's a light blinking. Yeah. Low battery.
Stop it. It's not dead yet.
But it's low battery. We need to go. All systems go.
Okay, everybody. Our other camera died, but this one has charged. So we are back to the good quality camera. Back to the IMAX level footage,
70 millimeter
quality,
or die.
So everybody, we are back at it again with the white band. Okay, so
I think I was done saying what I was saying.
Okay, so they end up using the bomb on Japan in Nagasaki and Hiroshima against the small bit of input that Oppenheimer was able to give, that not a lot of the scientists really agreed with the use of it in Japan. So I'm not really sure why they decided to use the atomic bomb in Japan. I don't really know why it was needed, because I thought they made it seem in the movie, at least, that the war was like kind of starting to trickle out and everybody felt like America was going to beat Japan. So did they just want it to be over or what?
From my knowledge of World War II, Japan was never going to surrender unless we invaded their homeland, and that would have costed a lot more American lives.
How, it's just so weird to me, like, how hard it would be to be at war with somebody who's, like, so far away from you.
I know, right? And it's hard to, like, comprehend.
Yeah, and I guess there was also a lot of, I would assume, maybe like anger at the time because of the Pearl Harbor bombings, that maybe people were like really open to it.
Yeah, so this was a much faster solution to...
than going to war.
Than invading the mainland. Because, I mean, invading all the little islands before Japan took so long and a ton of lives. Okinawa and Iwo Jima,
mm-hmm.
Midway, all those.
So that's why they did it?
Yeah, I think that's why.
Still really sad.
But also, a lot of lives were lost. And it wasn't immediate. There were lasting effects for generations.
Yeah, with the way that radiation poisoning works.
Mm-hmm.
That reminds me of the show, the Chernobyl show.
Oh, yeah. That's such a good show.
That show, I've already watched it 2 times, and now I want to watch it again. Like, the second I forget what happens, I want to watch it again, because it's just so impactful to watch.
It's one of the best rated shows, like, ever, I mm-hmm. think.
And I'm really glad that they delved into the aftermath of the bombing, because I think it's... I was just expecting him to tell this cool story and then leave it at that, instead of going into, like, the kind of rough bit of, like, what the experience really was like, and... how terrible of a, like, tragedy it was.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, imagine that many lives gone in an instant.
It's, like, unfathomable.
People's, like, shadows burned into buildings.
If you, like, look at the pictures before and after, it's, like, completely obliterated city. There's nothing where there were, like, buildings. Yeah. Like, it's crazy. It just, like, destroyed, turned buildings to ash.
Apparently... only 150 soldiers died in the second bombing of Nagasaki.
So it was
the rest were civilian, and they wanted to target ports and factories.
That's so sad. So, after the bombing, Oppenheimer becomes the father of the atomic bomb. He, of course, is haunted by the destruction and all of the death, and he blames himself for it. He sees he has blood on his hands. But honestly, in my opinion, with or without him, regardless of how his work helped advance their timeline and their ability to make the bomb, like, they would have made an atomic bomb eventually, no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he is the reason that that tragedy happened. A atomic bomb would have been made and somebody would have used it.
Yeah. If it was us or Russia or Germany first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So there's a scene where he's speaking to the Los Alamos community and saying how proud he is of them. But you can see, like, inside he's actually just, like, deeply disturbed by what's happened. And he pictures the people in the room not cheering, but, like, basically being obliterated by an atomic bomb and, like, crying and terrified, rather than the screaming of happying, it's the screaming of, like, fear. And they really use, like, the sound and the sensory overload to make you feel overwhelmed and, like, distraught as well when you're watching it.
Yeah, so that scene very is well done. So haunting. So Christopher Nolan casted his daughter as one of the people in that audience that was, you remember, like, the woman with, like, the flesh.
Yeah, the fleshy skin. Yeah.
Yeah, that's his daughter.
Why?
He said, in an interview with Telegraph, Nolan spoke about this casting choice, remarking that if you create the ultimate destructive power, it will also destroy those who are near and dear to you. I suppose this was my way of expressing that in what to me were the strongest possible terms.
Mm.
Crazy.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. Okay, so Oppenheimer then afterwards is considered kind of a hero, but also very controversial. And so he goes to talk to President Truman and kind of, you know, let him know his apprehension to the continuation of atomic weapons programs, which, of course, the president disregards and pretty much makes fun of Oppenheimer for being a crybaby and says, you don't have blood on your hands. I do. I dropped the bomb. You just made it. And he said, do you think anybody in Japan cares who made the bomb? Which is true, honestly. They don't think who's the scientist who designed this. Yeah. They think who is the leader who authorized this being dropped on their city, you know?
Yeah, that scene was really good. Gary Oldman for the win, man.
He did a good job. Yeah, he
and
did
when
great.
He's like, I feel like I have blood on my hands, he like offered him a handkerchief.
I know, yeah, but he teased him with it. He was taunting him by it.
Yeah.
Was that in the script?
I wonder. Maybe.
So, now we're going to kind of get into the whole second trial. So this has technically been going on the whole time, throughout the movie as you're visually watching it, but we're going to talk about it now because that's kind of the chronological order. So many years after, Oppenheimer is advocating against nuclear research, especially the hydrogen bomb. And it becomes kind of a tense subject with the Cold War, happening at the same time in the arms race. So the AEC chairman, Louis Strauss, basically hates Oppenheimer because he has publicly made fun of Strauss for his opinions on radioisotopes, and he also believes that Oppenheimer turned Einstein against him and made Einstein hate him. So because of this, Strauss takes out all of his anger on Oppenheimer by wanting to take away his public notoriety, I guess?
Image,
his public image. So he wants to basically take away his security clearance because that will be a public embarrassment for him. But he does this by leaking Oppenheimer's security file and having someone write an opinion letter in order for the AEC to have to open an investigation on Oppenheimer. And then Strauss, being the leader of the AEC, would be able to, you know, control how the entire investigation goes and basically rig it so that no matter what happens, Oppenheimer loses his security clearance.
What's really interesting about that is, like, you know the term mutually assured destruction?
Is it just karma?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, the same thing that happened to Oppenheimer happens to Strauss.
Because
they're both set in motions to destroy themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. That's interesting.
Which is just like a metaphor for the whole Cold War, pretty much.
That's so smart. Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, I thought it was interesting also how, like, Strauss is trying to get Oppenheimer's security clearance taken away by leaking classified files. Like, in my opinion, the person who leaks classified files should probably have their security clearance taken away.
The way they revealed
that. Have you not seen Reality?
The way they revealed that in the movie was really good. Just that whole conversation.
Yeah,
between...
it unfolded. It wasn't just like an exposition of this happened. This is a drama. Like,
yeah.
They kind of show you this crazy stuff happening, and then later Strauss reaches his breaking point and pretty much just confesses to his two close advisors in private that he rigged it so that Oppenheimer would lose his clearance.
Mm-hmm.
So now we are at the hearing. Where Oppenheimer is basically being questioned and tried for being a communist, and they throw extreme accusations at him for espionage, and they mock his lawyer, basically. And
he's set up
this
to lose.
Scene happens the whole movie. So you know from the start that whatever happens to Oppenheimer throughout the movie, he is going to end up here in this room with this unjust board hearing meeting thing. So,
I want to say the guy who plays the lawyer, mm-hmm. Jason Clarke,
yeah.
was so good. I love that actor.
Everybody was great. A lot of the actors in that boardroom were recognizable actors.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they were just like frustrating you so much with the way they were treating it in the hearing. And it's exactly the same thing that ended up happening to Strauss later with his hearing.
The scene got like so intense.
It was, I found a continuity in a Nolan movie, the continuity issue.
Was it the 50 stars?
What do you mean?
There were 50 stars on the American flags the audience were waving instead of,
Was this before Hawaii?
Yeah, before Hawaii.
I didn't know that. No, my continuity was that when, I'm not sure what the actor's name is, but the interrogator, the prosecutor.
Jason Clarke, yeah.
When Jason Clarke was doing his huge... like climax scene of yelling at him, and you see the flash of light, he wasn't wearing his glasses, but then all of a sudden he was wearing his glasses. Yeah, like in an instant. Like, there was no way. So continuity error.
Goodness.
Mm-hmm. So now we're gonna jump to Strauss's confirmation hearing. He wants to become the Secretary of Commerce. He's a little worried because people want to ask him about Oppenheimer, even though this new role of his would have nothing to do with the Atomic Committee, anything like that. But Hill, a scientist, Jonathan had mentioned, is that very popular actor. What's
Rami
his name?
Malek.
Rami Malek, testifies, and they think that he's going to testify in favor of Strauss, but he actually comes out and outs him for everything that he did to initiate the downfall of Oppenheimer. And of course, because of this, everybody's like, what?
What I don't get is how did David Hill know that? That's something I...
Because it was probably like well talked about in the community of scientists.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, like, do you know what happened to Oppenheimer, you know?
I guess so. But it's like Oppenheimer kind of treated David Hill like... didn't really pay attention to him either.
I know, but it's kind of nice how there's that kind of camaraderie amongst all the scientists who were involved in the Manhattan Project, of them like understanding what each and every one of them went through, and he stood up for him because of that sort of brotherhood that they had through that experience, even if they weren't particularly close as just people, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So Strauss, of course, loses his nomination to the Senate. Also, Robert Downey Jr. has a wonderful monologue. I honestly didn't even realize it was Robert Downey Jr. Like, I recognized his face and I knew who he was, but he really embodied the character so well throughout the movie that I don't even like associate him, because it's very hard with movies where you stack your cast to picture them as the character. And I think all of the actors like truly embodied their character and who they were playing like exceptionally.
Agreed. I think this is Downey's best performance in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did wonderful.
Completely different than anything he's done.
So, basically, at the end, they kind of also do an expose showing you that Oppenheimer didn't actually turn Einstein against Strauss. They were really having a conversation about the implications of atomic weapons, and how Oppenheimer had originally come to Einstein saying, oh my gosh, this bomb could potentially set off a chain reaction that would destroy the world. And in reality, even though it didn't physically destroy the world, it has completely changed and destroyed the world, in that now atomic weapons dominate like the military's means of mass destruction.
It's just, it's a genius ending.
It's
one of my favorite endings in a movie, like, in a long time.
It was really good. And I really didn't think they were going to ever tell us what Einstein said to, or what Oppenheimer said to Einstein. So I wonder if that's true, or if it just was, like, so poetic that they had to do it.
And the music, and Kitty not shaking Edward Teller's hand actually did happen in real life.
Wow.
And you can see her, like, getting spit in her mouth during that scene, too.
Yeah, to, like, spit on him. Because she had said earlier she would spit on him if she ever saw him. Well, do you have anything else to talk about? I think we went really deep on this one.
We did, yeah. It's,
and we also had three camera switches.
True. Yeah, it's perfect.
So what movie do you want to do next week? We talked about it, but I forgot.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do The Meg
2. Oh, my God, yeah. After us doing Barbie and Oppenheimer, we want to just watch like a trash movie. Yeah, let's do a chillax one. So we're going to watch The Meg 2, which means I have to watch The Meg 1 to prepare myself so that, of course, I know what's going on.
Beans is so excited. She's like, I'm a Meg. I bite everything.
She's sleeping. Okay, bye, guys.
Bye.